Coming up on this bonus episode of the podcast Under the Stairs, this show is dedicated to you, dear listeners. We go through some of the questions and discussion points raised on the Facebook group page. But first, this is year four, motherfuckers, and this time, it's war. Warning, the podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to this bonus episode of the podcast Under the Stairs. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. So yeah, like I said back on Monday, my plans fell through for this week. That was a bit of a shame and I went to the Facebook group page and I said, guys, I have nothing planned. What would you like to see from the podcast Under the Stairs this week? And you guys clubbed together and from the three suggestions that I put out, you guys didn't pick one clear winner. Basically, all three suggestions got about equal share of the vote. So, with that in mind, I decided to divvy it up. So, on Monday, the day before Valentine's Day, we did the My Bloody Valentine commentary. That was for the remake from 2009. Some fantastic feedback for that. Some people enjoying the nonsense. That is a fun fucking movie. I don't care what anyone says. The second suggestion I put out was, would you like something topic-based? Because sometimes I don't get the opportunity to do that. There's plenty of things happening out in the horror world, whether it's with movies or just the community in general. And we don't usually talk about that in the podcast Under the Stairs. We try and keep it more focused on movie reviews and goofy shenanigans. And yeah, you guys decided that you wanted to hear me talk about some of that, so that was pretty cool. So we will be doing that on this show, and then coming up on Monday, I'll be joined with a very special guest who will be making his podcast Under the Stairs debut. Very excited for that. And we'll be covering two early 80s movies which have a common link in that Tom Savini does some bitching practical effects on that. So that will be coming on Monday. But yeah, like I say, this is pretty awesome. Updates, house rules at the start. I believe all the t-shirts and baseball tops have been dispatched, which means that some people should be getting them in the UK anyway over the next couple of days. Looking forward to seeing photos of people wearing their podcast Under the Stairs at Baz V Horror shit. That's what I'm looking forward to. So make sure that you get that shit on when it arrives. Get some photos, and maybe even do a prize of some description, a Blu-ray for the most insane place that or out there place that you can wear a Baz V Horror podcast Under the Stairs top. So think outside the box. We'll get some photos sent in. We'll do it through Instagram. Actually, that's a good point, right? I'm literally winging this. Fuck it, we'll do it live. We'll do it live. God damn it. Right, here we go. Competition just made up on the spot. If you bought a Baz V Horror t-shirt or baseball top, if you can find the most insane place possible to wear said top and get a photo of yourself done and tag the podcast Under the Stairs Instagram at TeaputsCast, in a couple of weeks' time we'll pick our favourite and the one that gets picked will win a prize. So there you go. Sounds like fun. I get the feeling some people may get in trouble because of this. You can't blame me. I'm just talking on a podcast. That does not mean that I own you or I control your life. Or maybe I do. And if that is the case, bring me coffee, please. I need some coffee, please. So anyway, yeah, like I say, this episode we will be looking at some of your listener questions and discussion topics raised through the Facebook group page. If you're not a member of our absolutely bitchin' fantastic amazing Facebook group page, you can do that by going to Facebook and going to facebook.com/groups/TeaputsCast. Now, in super, super, duper exciting news, next week we will be launching our posters. The long-awaited posters will be arriving for pre-order next week. I am going to see a particular company on Saturday to confirm that they are the ones that are going to be printing them. And if that goes ahead, then I will get everything else in place and we'll probably look to do the links to buy them next week, kind of late next week, for aim to have them posted out early the week after. So keep your eyes peeled for that. First 25 will be numbered and signed by the Baz, with an option to have them signed by me. Anything that's sold above that will be non-signed and non-numbered, but still fucking bitching with that fantastic Joshua Kelly artwork. Speaking of Joshua Kelly, he sent me a sneak peek of his upcoming project that he's working on, and this man knows how to tickle my fancy, if you know what I mean. It's fucking amazing. I absolutely love it. I can't talk about it, but I dare say he'll put sneak peeks up on his Instagram and stuff like that during the process, so you should go and check that out. It's fucking awesome. Awesome stuff. Can't wait. Can't wait. Right. So I think that's all I needed to update at the start of this episode. I think so. Yeah, we've got lots of things to talk about. You guys sent a lot of stuff in. So we're going to take our first break of this episode. When I return, it's time to look at some of the discussion topics and questions that you posted on the Facebook group page. You're going to listen to right now, though, some promos for shows that I love and a song. I'm going to shove a bit of music in here. When I come back, I'm going to be discussing some stuff right after this.
As you know, the Doomsday Clock is a symbolic clock face analogizing humankind's proximity to extinction.
Start the clock.
The end is coming, and so is this podcast, Witch versus the Doomsday Clock. Rants, reviews, and opinions in 15 minutes, or your money back.
Hello, I'm Gore Blimey, and I'm your host on the Trilogy of Terror podcast. Each month, I'll look at one director and talk about three of their horror movies, kicking things off in episode one with Lamberto Bava, the man who brought us Demons. Now, the horror films might not always be scary, or even good, but, well, if that happens, what movie and pizza night isn't all the better for a bit of extra cheese? Come and check out the show at gentlemansgrindhouserecords.com or find it on iTunes and Stitcher.
The Trilogy of Terror podcast, where we try three times harder to give you the willies.
Come on, babe.
Oh,
And welcome back. So, yeah, like I say, this came out of an idea that seemed to pop up, kind of self-perpetuating idea that arrived on the Facebook group page at the hands of our good buddy Joshua Kelly and long-time listener Verbal Cat. They kind of put forward a couple of ideas of some questions or discussion points that we could talk, and we've spun it out to something a bit bigger. So let's get into this. So much stuff to talk about. Some of these are absolutely fucking awesome. So the first one is Jamie Miskell, who I want to say is a fairly new listener, but I think she's been listening now for about half a year, which is absolutely rad. She says, great horror movie soundtrack or horror-based music. Go. So that is a really good question. I think I've said on here before that one of my favourite soundtracks to any horror movie of all time is the Goblin soundtrack for Suspiria. I'm a big fan of that soundtrack. See, if you listen to that at night, you know, just in a dark room, you genuinely start to get unnerved. There's something about it. I think it's just, it matches up so well with that movie. And that movie is like one of my favourite horror movies of all time. I think in terms of actual music, which is in the realms of, we'll come back to soundtracks, but kind of horror based music, so music that is tinged with a horror theme, so to speak. I mean, there's obvious ones. I think Rob Zombie's a whole hell of a lot of fun. Don't always love all the movies he does, but album wise to me, he's not really had a bad album. There's been some with less quality than others, and I usually like them because it's always fun to listen out for the horror clips or samples that he does, of which there's always quite a lot in the stuff that he's doing. He's obviously started doing that with his own movies now, but you usually get quite a lot of fun ones. Even when he was with White Zombie, that was pretty cool as well. I think you could go down the road of bands that take maybe a more kind of horror theme. I mean, Ghost is a great example of that. Ghost have an image which would sit very well within a kind of a horror movie, but at the same time, I think it's more their artwork and the way they present themselves as a package that is far more interesting. If you look at the design work for their very first album, or first three albums actually, they're all plays on different horror movie artwork. That first one being Salem's Lot, the second one being Rosemary's Baby, and the third one escapes me right now. But yeah, they've always had that in their mind if you look at their merch or t-shirts. I mean, I've got a Halloween one, which I got last year for Halloween, funnily enough. So I think they do it quite well. You know, they're taking more the visual aspect and taking that forward rather than taking the actual horror theme in the music, although you could argue to a certain extent Satanism in their music maybe delves more in the horror side. I don't know, it's a conversation for another day. In terms of horror movie soundtracks overall, I really enjoyed this kind of uptake of synth based horror movie soundtracks. I, for those that don't know out there, that's my instrument of choice. That's what I learned to play high school was keyboards, and then got into synths when I left college. And then into bands where I fronted a band which had, wait for it, a guitar, which I played. That's right, bitching and cool, regardless what anyone else tells you. Always bitching and cool. It's been really fun to see that whole thing come back into vogue all of a sudden. Like, synths are cool again, and they always seem to do that. They're cool for a couple of years, they disappear, and then they come back again. So I've really enjoyed that aspect. It follows soundtrack. Done by Disaster Piece is fucking amazing. You check out the Green Room soundtrack to an extent, which uses in part punk, but at the same time uses some synth. It's pretty cool. I think if you check something like Your Next, which had a great soundtrack, which incorporated kind of John Carpenter-esque sort of stuff, as well as that kind of 70s rock vibe, works really well. I think slasher movies from the 80s had all that metal in the soundtrack, which is pretty fucking amazing. Demons, being the prime example. The Demons soundtrack is absolutely fucking bitching. So yeah, hopefully that has answered your question. I think there's a lot of good stuff out there. A lot of horror movie soundtracks are being pressed on vinyl these days and costing people a lot of money to buy. But it's good to see people take a note of that. I can't think of many other movie genres out there where people are as rabid about getting sim tracks. I can't remember the last time someone said, you know what I need to get my hands on? That Hangover 2 sim track. That was absolutely bitching. Never ever heard anyone say that. So yeah, there you go. Thank you for sending your question in, Jamie. Right. Ooh, so the next one came in from Katie Pollock. Katie's been listening for a wee while now as well, actually. She came across last year. She asks, movies that genuinely scared you. Like you've not been able to sleep without the light being on. And also, what was the first horror movie you'll introduce to your kid when they're older, unless you already have? In which case, what was it? Thanks for the question, Kate. Right. This is a good one. Movies that genuinely scare me. There, believe it or not, there probably are more than you would think, even though I'm on the more hardened aspect at my grand old age of 35, having been watching horror movies since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. I think the last movie that genuinely scared the fuck out of me was Wreck. I saw Wreck in the cinema, in a small independent cinema in Edinburgh when it came out, and it terrified the life out of me. I did not know what I was going to see, and I was wholly unprepared for what I saw. Movies like The Descent stuck with me for a few days after watching it, and it scared me. There are movies that stay with me that don't necessarily scare me, but I'm unable to shake them from my mind. The recent one, Neon Demon, stuck with me for days. I just kept obsessing about what I'd seen. Which, once again, to me is a hallmark of a really good movie. There's one slightly out with the horror genre. It's more fringe horror, if anything else, called The Treatment, which my buddy Andy Blockley had been talking about for a while, and I actually got it from my friend Dave for my birthday last year. And I watched that, and the subject matter was really quite disturbing. And it stuck with me for a wee while after it as well. There have been plenty of movies when I was younger. I mean, Blair Witch Project. I used to have to walk through a large wooded area as a shortcut from my then work at a video store home. Walking through these woods shaved about 45 minutes off my walking time. And after seeing the Blair Witch Project for about 2 or 3 weeks, I had to walk an extra 45 minutes because I refused to do it. It really got to me. There was something about that. I think found footage movies have a good tendency because they can be quite vague and you put quite a lot of yourself in them. They can sometimes hang around like a bad smell. Poughkeepsie Tapes is a great example of that. I mean, we all heard Bazzy's trauma when watching that. You guys never heard the trauma the first time I watched that. That movie fucked me up. Really, really unnerved me. There were some things in it that were just very, very creepy. Home Movie, which is a found footage movie, stuck with me quite a bit after watching it as well. So, yeah, hopefully that's answered your question. Movies that I'll introduce to my kid that are horror. I mean, she's watched some, but she's only 2.5 years old, or almost 3 now, actually. So she's never really been in a position where she's fully taken what I am watching in. Like, if she watched the TV, it's totally... It doesn't make sense to her, if that makes sense. You know, it's just images on a screen. So, yeah, I've not watched anything with her yet along those lines. She is getting really into some bits and bobs. She's obsessed with Halloween still, even though we're months removed. She's always watching YouTube videos with songs about pumpkins and witches and vampires and ghosts, and she loves that shit. So I think she's going to be quite healthy there in terms of how I will get her into horror. Where do we start? Well, I always say that there are certain gateways to get in there. Scooby-Doo is probably the best one, because in Scooby-Doo, the message behind that one is you're taught that the monsters are just people dressed up, which is a great kind of idea to begin to branch out from. You know, this is only a movie, don't worry about it, because remember the person that's running after the co-ed teenager, that person's only a man in a mask. So she loved Paranorman. Paranorman was a really good one. It had zombies and stuff like that. I think if I was moving her on to something else, it would probably more likely be in that kind of zombie genre that makes sense, as opposed to throwing her into slashers, which tend to be highly sexualized, or maybe even maybe some Haunted House movies. Maybe a wee bit of early Vincent Price would be pretty cool, or some Christopher Lee, maybe some Hammer horror, the stuff that isn't all bright red blood and fake tits, although they weren't fake back then, so there you go. Yeah, there you go. I think that answers your question, Kate. Thank you very much for sending that question, and always great to hear from you. You're very, very active and posted on the page, and I like it. I like it a lot. Up next, our good buddy Myron Schmidt. We do love a bit of Myron. He says, what horror movie deserved a sequel but never got one? We spoke about it just a couple of weeks ago. Behind the Mask should have had a sequel. Looks like it is going to have a sequel. Can't wait to see that sequel. There's a movie that deserved a franchise. That could have been a ton of fun. They could have taken that all over the place, in loads of different directions. They never got the opportunity to do it. I'm trying to think if there's any other horror movies of late where I'm like that. That deserved a sequel. I quite like the one and done formula, if I'm honest. I don't think there are many movies that really hold up to that longevity now. I think we're in a different time period now as well. I think people lose interest quicker than they have ever done before. It's very difficult to do something that will keep people coming in to check out more installments. I think we found that it didn't help that Paranormal Activity shat the bed, but Paranormal Activity and Saw are great examples of modern franchises that were just beaten into the ground by repetitiveness, and not in a way where audiences were going, you know, having fun watching those movies. They were just going and just being beaten down, almost as kind of guilt shaming to go and see more movies because you'd seen three. Everyone became a completionist all of a sudden. I'm trying to think if there's a... Is there one that I really would like? I mean, I don't know. Probably not. I think the one that springs to mind, and I dare say I'll get a bit of a million answers once I finish recording, but the one that springs to mind, the one that I always go back to, is Behind the Mask that had a sequel, greenlit right away, never got one. Maybe even to an extent Trick or Treat. You know, some that was a really good solid anthology that could have, better than solid, it's a fucking amazing anthology, that there was scope to take Sam in so many different directions, and that never happened either. So hopefully that answers your question, and once again, thanks for writing in, Myron. Good buddy, Myron. Next up, Sarah Hood. Sarah says, what movies to you were utter crap? Yeah, recently there's been a few, and I've taken a bit of heat from people who are just like, that you should not be talking about these movies. I made it no secret at all, I hated Tusk. I thought Tusk was pish. Like, a bad movie. A really poorly written movie. People are like, well, you just don't get the goofy Kevin Smith sense of humour. I do. Like, his early career has some of the best kind of indie comedies of all time. I just don't think any of the biting dialogue or really good direction were there at all. I just thought it was a very lackluster shit movie. And then Yoga Hosers come out, and Yoga Hosers made Tusk look good. I really didn't like Yoga Hosers. I thought it was more of the same shite. And I think Kevin Smith, to an extent, gets a lot of people forgiving him for making bad movies by saying it's a Kevin Smith movie, and I don't think that's fair. I think he's a really good director when he wants to be. I just don't think he really has the stomach to want to make a really good movie anymore. I just think he wants to make things that interest him, and that is his prerogative as a director. He can do whatever he wants. Does not mean I like them. 31 was awful. The Green Inferno was awful. And these are just ones I can think off the top of my head that I've seen. Like, I hate The Green Inferno. I don't know what Eli Roth was thinking about, but that was not a good movie. And 31 was just, by Rob Zombie standards, that's like, I think that might be the worst thing he's put his name on. I think I might actually like Halloween 2 more than I like 31. If that's not a sweeping statement of condemnation, I don't know what is. But we'll get into that when Baz does his Rob Zombie retro as his end of year assessment. So yeah, that's pretty shit. There are other ones that I've seen that I don't, I mean, utter crap is a difficult one for me because I tend to try and find the good in everything. I really do. I mean, I think Tusk is an awful movie. I think it's shot beautifully. Although for some reason Yoga Hosers is not shot beautifully, it's shot pretty shitly. Cinematography on that one is not good. Even recently, that new Blair Witch movie that came out, yeah, it's dumb as a bag of rocks, but I was still looking at some of the positives. I liked some of the mythos that they inserted. I didn't like it all, but some of it I thought was pretty cool, and it made me think more about the first movie, which I think if you're going to do a direct sequel, you kind of want to do. It's not a great movie, but I try and find the good in everything. I mean, Dario Argento's vampire movie, Dracula 3D, is fucking awful. So yeah, if you're looking for that, I could probably just list off a list of things. I don't know if you've noticed this, listeners, but I tend to aim the show more towards being positive about movies. I very seldom pick movies that I dislike, and they occasionally happen. But for the most part, it tends to be high scoring movies because I'd much rather spend my energy telling people to watch movies that I like than avoid movies that I dislike. So there we go. Thank you for writing in, Sarah. That was a great, great question. Love it. Right, last question, and we're going to take a very short break, and I'm going to go fix myself a little whiskey. Not a whiskey, Mac. Just a whiskey. Right, this one comes in from our good buddy across the water, Michael McCloskey. He says, what subgenre needs a resurgence? What one, aside from zombies, could maybe do with going away? What one needs a resurgence? I always say slashers. I always come back to that. Give me a really good slasher movie and I'm happy. And we still get, there are still a lot of slasher movies coming out, but just none of that top tier slasher stuff that I really enjoy. And I always say that, and I think maybe it will happen, but I recently have been thinking, like last year we got a lot of really good indie art house horror movies, and I would love to see more of that. I think that's where my interest lies, and I would love to see some more of that. With art house cinema, you can really tackle anything, put your own spin on it. So it could be a Dracula movie, it could be like a slasher movie. Like maybe some more movies that can pay homage to the giallos or the giallies would be pretty good. The Astron 6 guys put out The Editor, which is poking fun at the genre lovingly. I think it's a fucking amazing movie because it gets what a giallo is supposed to be. Same with that couple that did The Strange Colour of Your Body's Tears, and the movie which came before that, which escapes me, but I fucking love it. I think that sort of stuff's really interesting as well towards me. So yeah, I would love to see more of that kind of genre stuff coming back. What ones could go away apart from zombies? I think devil movies, possession movies, we could be doing with less of them. These Paranormal Activity movies, or things like Paranormal Event movies, or fucking Ouija board movies or whatever. We could be doing well a little less of that, and I would like to. No movie has disappointed me more this year than The Bye Bye Man, which I had no expectations for, but when I went to see it, I was like, this is the epitome of everything I hate, and why is this in the cinema? And I had to buy a Blu-ray for Neon Demon because Neon Demon didn't get played. Why? Where is the fairness in that, ladies and gents? Where's the fairness? So yeah, thank you very much for writing in, Michael. I know you're one of those guys that tirelessly posts on the page and keeps us going, and I've been listening to the show for fucking years now. We are practically siblings. You've been listening to the show for that long. Right, I'm going to take a break. You're going to hear more promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear another little clip of music. Shove some more music in here. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation a-rolling. But I'm going to take a break, and I'll be right back right after this.
Hello. You've heard of Honest Movie Trailers, right? This is an honest podcast promo. I'm not going to fill it with sound effects and explosions and quotes from movies and all that kind of stuff, Because, hey, I wouldn't want to build up your hopes on the production values of what you might actually get if you download our silly little podcast. Instead, I'm just going to put in a highly inappropriate in-joke that you won't get unless you listen to the show.
The Little Pod of Horrors. The best idea since premarital sex on Halloween.
Like I said, pussy's back on the table.
Find us on simplysyndicated.com and on iTunes. If you dare.
Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts is a weekly podcast that discusses grindhouse and exploitation cinema. Your three hosts, Mike.
It's a quick... Thank you, come again.
Not racist at all.
Mark.
If you bend over and you have what is essentially a pubic cottontail coming out of the crack of your ass, you need to do some goddamn grooming.
And listener favorite, Iris.
I'd not have sex with that horse.
We'll make you question your own political correctness while laughing at theirs. Episodes drop every Sunday and can be found by searching BB and BC Podcasts via Libsyn, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iHeartRadio. You can also listen to episodes directly from the show's website at badassesboobsandbodycounts.com.
And welcome back. So let's continue on with the questions. This is more a discussion topic, and it's from our good buddy Myron Schmidt. He says, let's talk vampires in modern TV and movies post-Twilight near destruction of a viable genre. Right, I've kind of already covered this on Chronicle podcast. Season 2 of my sidecast was exclusively looking at European horror cinema through the lens of vampirism. And I said on that I think it's still a very buoyant subgenre. I think there's plenty out there for people to check out if you want to get them. I think they're still making very interesting vampire movies. They're just not historically the sort of vampire movies that you would generally get. Something like Kiss of the Damned or Byzantium, Let the Right One In. These are great examples of modern sort of takes on the vampirism subgenre. I don't necessarily think Twilight is the stake through the heart, so to speak, that kind of put vampires out. It certainly was spearheading a lot of kind of teen horror trends at the time, if we can call it that. It was a very successful book series, so it was, you know, ultimately always going to go down that road. But you could look at something like True Blood, which had a far more adult kind of content focus, but at the same time you could say that there was a certain degree of neutering of vampires in that show as well. You could look at it from that point of view. I don't think they're ever going to be as big as they were. In fact, I would go as far as to say they were never really all that big. There was some classics out in the 80s. I mean, Lost Boys is a great example. But if you look at the remake of Nosferatu, or even to an extent, if you look at one of the best vampire movies of all time, Near Dark, it's when people start putting alternative spins on them. I mean, I am a huge fan of John Carpenter's vampires, but recently was watching a documentary on Indicator. Indicator are a new brand in the UK, and they've just put out both Vampires and Ghosts of Mars. And I was checking out Ghosts of Mars because I'm a sadist. I actually quite like that movie. But I was checking out the special features, and John Carpenter was doing a Q&A session back in the day with the, I believe it was the Guardian in the UK that were hosting it. And he gets asked about different subgenres and ones that he doesn't want to do. And he, on that show, says that vampires have been done to death and he has no interest in doing a vampire movie and all the rest. And then within a couple of years, he puts out Vampires, which is, for all intents and purposes, a very paint-by-numbers vampire movie. He just puts the spin of putting it in a kind of almost the stint or lens of the Old West. And that's his idea on it. So I think you can put them in any setting, really, that you want. I mean, they're kind of timeless creatures, so to speak. But I think the interesting aspect comes when they do things that are different with it, when they play with the lore. I thought Kiss of the Damned was every bit as romantic a story as Twilight, but Kiss of the Damned really captured the foreboding tension of being immortal and how that impacts on what you want in life. But done through this really, really, really cool lens, this kind of almost 70s European cinema slant. So yeah, I don't think it's impossible. I think it just needs the right directors and the right medium and a different spin to really bring it to a point where people will take interest again. But let's be honest, one every other year is not a bad thing. I don't want to be in a position like I am with zombie movies, where I literally get Train to Busan but the rest of the year everything's a bit dim. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question, Myron. So next, Chris Westerton asks, which, if any, films would you like to see remade? I always say The Stuff. I would love to see The Stuff get a remake. I think it'd be bloody fun, especially in this idea of viral marketing campaigns online. You could have all the online ads, you know, enough is never enough. Sorry for that. But yeah, I think that would be a fun one to do. But I think anything that's... I'm not against remakes. I've never been against remakes. I'm one of these morbid people that's actually quite interested to see what they do with Suspiria. And my list of movies I can't wait to see. I was really looking forward to checking out the Maniac Cop remake, which is supposed to be coming this year. So I'm not against them. I just think sometimes the pick choices which are not movies that really should be revisited. I'd like, for example, I don't think you should ever remake Jaws because Jaws is a perfect movie, so why remake it? You're never really going to do something that's going to better the Spielberg version, so why take an interest in doing that? But movies that are not perfect, like a great example, Maniac, a movie that I fucking love from 1980. A really gritty, sleazy, exploitative slasher movie. You know, it gets a remake, and the remake takes it in a different direction, different spin. And ultimately what you get is an incredible movie, which is in the same kind of ballpark as the original, but is very much its own movie. So I think if you do that sort of thing, I think it could be really quite interesting. That's why I'm quite interested about Maniac Cop, the current climate in America just now with police. It could be something that could be played in a really interesting way, fear of the police, and how that plays into the Maniac Cop story could be brilliant. But whether or not we'll get that's another story. But yeah, hopefully that has answered your question, Chris. Right, next is Darren Wilson. Darren says, are you looking forward to the My Friend Dahmer movie? Any opinion on the choice of a kid from the Disney Channel to play Dahmer? It was kind of fun, actually. So you got me this for my Christmas. It was something I was always knew about, but I had never seen. And never really, like, I keep forgetting it exists. And you sent it over, and I actually read right through it, rattled through it in about a day. I thought it was absolutely fucking brilliant. And then, of course, on the front it says, soon to be this motion picture movie. And I don't know how you do it. To be honest with you, I don't know how they will do it. I really struggle to see how that transfers into a movie, what the market is and how you put it out there, unless it's like this kind of weird indie horror movie but it says major motion picture, so I don't know where that stems. In terms of like any Disney child actors that I would like to see play Dahmer, I don't know that either, if I'm being honest. I'm pretty shit at this question. I would spin it to you, Darren. Is there any kid actors out there just now that you're like, you have all the traits and hallmarks of a very young Jeffrey Dahmer? If so, let me know with a picture so I can say, oh yeah, he looks like a bit of a Dahmer, or not. I don't know, not sure at all. So yeah, but that's a great question. Once again, thank you for that gift, it's fucking amazing. Up next, Big Dean Martin says, how Train to Busan and Girl with All the Gifts have given a shot in the arm to the stale subgenre known as zombies. So this is your discussion point. How have these movies given a shot in the arm to the stale genre of zombies? I think the key is the subject matter they come from. Girl with All the Gifts is a really, really, really good movie. I've never read the book. I've been told the book is fucking amazing, but it's coming off this really well beloved horror novel, and they've adapted it in such a way which, you know, I believe they've tried to stay quite true to the source material. So maybe that's why it's given it a shot, because it's not just making a zombie movie which is paid by numbers. It's working off an actual story that someone has penned, made for an audience who's not your average cinema goer. Train to Busan is a fucking amazing movie. I think it works just because, once again, it's that idea of Korean cinema. I think Korean cinema can do everything. You can watch a movie that is goofy, funny, absurd, emotional, horrific, all in the space of 2 hours. It really is the definitive roller coaster ride, and have such a poignant and emotional climactic end as well to kind of land on. I just think it's because these people know how to tell stories, and the average zombie movie is basically someone will be bitten, an outbreak will happen, an unlikely group of people will survive, all of them won't survive though, and you know, the movie pretty much films itself from that point. And do I think they've given them the the shot in the arm that the zombie genre needs. I don't think the zombie genre is going away anytime soon until Walking Dead numbers like crash horribly. As long as that's still one of the most watched TV shows on the telly, there will be an abundance of zombie movies. They're easy and cheap to make. You don't really need to rely on great acting for them either. I said before that I thought The Battery was going to be this big boost for zombie movies, and then we didn't get that after The Battery. There was very few that came out that I thought were great. So I don't know if necessarily Train to Busan or Girl with All the Gifts will do that. I'm just thankful we got them. I thought both movies were fucking brilliant. So yeah, if you've not seen either, please, please, please check them out. Dino goes on to say, some horror news. The recent Halloween movie updates, the cancellation to Friday the 13th, Jeepers Creepers 3, Saw Legacy, and the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the can waiting on release. So this ties into Joshua's question, which kind of kicked everything off. Joshua basically said to me, what were my takes on the new Halloween movie news? So John Carpenter coming out to say, by the way, we have a director and a writer now. One of these writers being Danny McBride. He of Kenny fucking Powers fame. Oh, that's good coffee. And the internet about shat a brick. John Carpenter said he was kind of looking forward to maybe even scoring this one, which once again, the internet about shat a brick. I made a post on a Facebook page last week which commented, it was a veiled comment on this one, veiled comment, where I basically said that the horror genre at time, or horror communities at time, can be so insanely negative. It actually bums me out, and a lot of that comes from the news that came out about Halloween. I am eternally optimistic. I would love to see this movie. Blumhouse certainly are not shying away from the fact that they're doing this movie, and that's a good sign. They have the money behind them to put a movie like this out. John Carpenter releasing statements is usually a good sign, although you should never keep that written in stone. John Carpenter has said a lot of things in the past which are I believe honest at the time, but maybe they don't always come to fruition. I am neither up nor down on my thoughts on Danny McBride writing it. I think, why not? The guy is talented, he's a very funny actor, he's going to be in the new Alien Covenant movie. I think, why not give it to a comedian to write the script? It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a funny movie. For all you know, this guy can write some seriously dark shit. Give it to him. I could not care less about that. I just want to see the movie come out. I think we have waited long enough to see The Return of Michael Myers. I wasn't overly keen on either Rob Zombie movie, you listeners know that. Let's bring it back and let's see what we can do with it, and if it goes well, I think that some of the other projects that have been tiring in limbo will come back out. You made mention of the cancellation of Friday the 13th. It literally happened about 2 days after I made a comment on a podcast about it. Not to say that I thought it was going to be cancelled, just that I wasn't overly keen about the idea of let's go back to the beginning to when Jason was a kid. I'm not really in. Sometimes that mystique or that kind of 5-minute flashback is all we really need. If you flesh it out too much, like Rob Zombie did with Halloween, you lose my interest. So am I distraught that it's been I do think we will get a Friday the 13th movie. I think it will come after the Halloween movie, though. I think the Halloween movie will do really good business because it's Halloween, it's part of a franchise. Michael Myers, huge character, Blumhouse behind it, John Carpenter attaching his name in some capacity to it, it will do really, really, really well. And when that money comes in, I think Friday the 13th will follow suit. I think Nightmare on Elm Street will follow suit. You ask about Jeepers Creepers 3, couldn't give a tiny rat's ass about that movie. And yes, I am one of those ones that hypocritically love Polanski movies but never really talk about the allegations of child molestation it has against his name. And then this dude that put out the Jeepers Creepers movies, you know, who did time for child molestation, that was never really the issue. That I never wanted to see a Jeepers Creepers 3. I thought the first one was quite a cool movie, actually. I remember when it came out, I remember going to the cinema to see it, remember really liking it, even though people thought that the fact it was a creature that was doing it was pretty dumb. I thought the second movie was beige. I really thought the second movie didn't do really anything at all like the first movie, and it just didn't, like kids trapped in a school bus, nah, sorry, not for me. So the idea of a third movie coming along, I just don't know what you do with that now to make it interesting. I'm kind of over it. Saw Legacy, kind of in the same boat here with this one. When I was talking recently to Derlin Bimsman on the show just before Christmas, I asked him if his name could be attached to a new Saw project, would he do it? And he said, if you'd asked him a couple of years ago, he would have said no. If you ask him now, he'd be quite keen to see where he could take it. That story's been done to death. I mean, we had 7 movies in that installment, and the grand reveal at the end of the 7th movie was, for lack of a better word, shit. They oversaturated and overcomplicated something that should have just been a simple... Like The Purge. The Purge has got the... I don't even necessarily think The Purge movies are amazing, but The Purge has got the right idea. Standalone stories, set them up. Let's just go. Saw could have been like that. But no, they had to... And this happens because this happened to Jigsaw when he was here at this point, when he bumped into his wife who did this, who knew this guy at this time, who then fell into this trap to do this. And we spent more time... I honestly would love to see a montage of just the flashbacks. Just the flashback sequences from Saw, because there is almost a full movie worth of flashbacks out of those movies. If you tied them all together, I reckon there's easily over an hour of flashback footage. It got to the point where I didn't know. Plus, some characters, really, two of the cops looked really, really similar, and I started getting confused which one was Hoffman. I'm not really interested in that one at all. It might be a Netflix viewing when it eventually arrives. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, it's apparently filmed, it's ready to come out, it's got Teenage Leatherface, which once again, right away, it does not have Duncan sold. I want to check it out because it's a movie genre, a franchise, which we're going to be discussing real fucking soon on the podcast Under the Stairs, and I genuinely think Baz is in for the shock of his life because that franchise takes a tumble quicker than Halloween takes a tumble. You know, I'm really waiting to be wowed by an amazing Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. Could this be the one to do it? Maybe. The guys from Inside are the ones that are directing it. I love Inside. I think Levied, their second movie, is fucking amazing as well. Can they do something? I don't know. If it's going to be overtly gory, then they probably missed the point. The original movie doesn't have that much gore at all in it. It's psychological terror at its finest. If it's a prequel, are they going to try and tie it to the first movie? I don't know if that's going to work. I don't know. I'm walking in with a fairly open mind, though. I want to see it do something for me. I'll tie in, that was a bit of news that dropped today about American Horror Story Season 7 and how it's going to basically mimic the 2016 presidential elections in America. And I noticed that some people on the internet were very much for it and some people very much against it, depending on your political bent. I think it's a fascinating thing just to do. I think horror's at its best when it's reflecting the anxiety that is currently in our systems, our psyches. And that's when horror really starts to shine, and there's a lot of it going around just now. If they did it somehow linking it to like a Dead Zone kind of pastiche or paying homage, then I think that would be fucking amazing, and they should certainly do that. Sometimes real life is scarier than fiction, so there you go. I just wanted to throw that in. Let's move on to our next question. This one, oh hello, comes in from Chuck Knight. He dropped this one tonight. He says, the nutritional value of haggis versus American bologna. I am Scottish, so I will defend haggis to my dying breath. I'm not a big fan of bologna, actually. I don't think it tastes of anything that makes any sense. I think it tastes like meat that's been pumped full of gelatinous water. Whereas haggis has a very distinct spicy taste. In terms of the nutritional value, I'll probably imagine that the Americans have the Scots bit out on this one. Haggis has a lot of animal fat in it. It's got a lot of suet, which does not necessarily make it healthy. I think if you eat like the same, if you eat the same amount of haggis in a month that you eat of of this meat based nonsense, then you would probably put on more weight with the haggis. So yeah, there you go. But I'll always say haggis because I'm Scottish. You have to do that. Next question comes from our buddy Vanessa. Vanessa says, propose a drinking game for the movie of your choosing. Ooh, that is a really good one. That is a really, really good one. So propose a drinking game that could accompany a movie. And I'm assuming by drinking game, we're working on one where we want to get fucked up. Let's see. Can I think of one off the top of my head? Yeah, right, here we go. A very recent one, very, very recent one. How about we do a bit of Neon Demon, my favourite movie from last year. But every time you see a blue or red light done in the style of Argento, do a shot. Trust me, your stomach will be getting pumped rotten and you'll be on life support. How about that one? Or even, let's go even a wee bit crazier. Let's say... right, let's try this one then. How about we go with a little bit of trauma? What about Poultrygeist? Every time you think to yourself, I will never eat chicken again or KFC, do a shot. That movie is pretty much one of the most horrendous things I've ever seen. And did make me want to vom a little. So there you go, vom a little. Right, Jerry Esposito comes in and says... I like this one as well, Jerry. This one is a pretty good one. Pretty, pretty good one. He says, most disturbing death scene in a horror film. Essentially, what would be the worst way to go? What would be the worst way to go using a horror movie death? Oh, Cannibal Holocaust, the guy that gets pinned up against the wall, gets his cock chopped off and then consumed by cannibals. I think that's up there. That's up there. Yeah, that's, yeah. That one, with a bullet. right, he also went on to say that his nomination is Philip Fitzroy in Jaws 3D. Not only is he face to face with a gargantuan sized shark, he swallowed whole, survives and is crushed to death inside its mouth. That's a good point. That is not a good way to go either. Not a good way to go. Dean Martin says, Harp or Tenants Lager? Tenants, even though I think it tastes... Tenants. I was gonna say something bad about it, but I actually don't mind a Tenants. Tenants is my beer of choice when I'm wanting a cheap night. Jerry then follows up by saying, have you ever been to Loch Carron? Now, for our Americans pronounce it Loch, and so do people from England. They would call it Loch Carron. It's Loch, Loch Carron. Yeah, Loch Carron. Is it really as amazing as it looks in the photos? I've never been up that side of the country, actually. I've been the other side. I've been Inverness, Elgin way, but I've never been across the Strathcarron side, you know, along Loch Carron. I believe from every picture that I've seen, it looks absolutely stunning and it will be a place that I will eventually visit somewhere down time. But when you see those pictures of picturesque lochs and beautiful scenery of the northern part of Scotland, believe the hype, it's all true. Countryside up there is absolutely fucking stunning. Dean Martin is my last question. He says, what subgenre of horror is underutilised? What one is underutilised? Serial killers. More serial killer horror movies. I love serial killer. I'm not talking slashers. I'm talking about actual psychological serial killer movies. Love them. Never get enough of them. Don't know why not. Once again, the truth is stranger than fiction. And real life stuff scares the bejesus out of me. So more of that, please. Now, the last thing I want to finish on is a discussion point that was raised right at the very start. Verbal Cat. She said that she wanted me to talk about horror fiction novels and ones that I liked, because I never really speak about it. And truth be told, I read nowhere near as much as I used to. As a kid, I was fairly voracious. I was always had a book in my hand, and they were mostly horror. Stephen King, being one of my entries into horror, as it probably was for a lot of kids. Later on, really my love of Clive Barker, and I have a ridiculous amount of love for Clive Barker as a novelist. I think he's incredible. The first Barker novel I read, by the way, I'm going to speak about Clive Barker here, so strap yourselves in. My first Clive Barker novel I read was The Hellbound Heart, and that was before seeing Hellraiser. But I saw Hellraiser the same year. I would have been, I want to say, about 12, 13. Kind of late coming to Hellraiser. The front cover of that in the video shop always used to skeeve me out. Followed up from checking out The Hellbound Heart to checking out Cabal, which later became Nightbreed, and The Damnation Game, which remains one of my favourites from Barker, and is one that I would love to see adapted. Kind of a Faustian tale of deals made with devils, and a card game with all the stakes, you know, firmly on the table. I think that's a fucking great novel. He's continued on. I think Weave World's really good. Lord of Illusions, good. As a movie, I think Lords of Illusions, like, amazing. I think his work on Nightbreed, I think he's just a great all-round artist. I loved his Books of Blood as well, and you get a lot of them out of there that went on to become movies as well, such as Candyman, Midnight Meat Train. The Yattering is a great short story. I highly recommend that people check that one out. I'm a big, big fan of Mr. Begon, which is one of his later novels. Very, very short thing. Kind of plays on the Yattering a little bit, but I think it's a whole hell of a lot of fun, that one. You know, when you open a book and the opening line is "Burn this book," you know you're onto something pretty cool. He later moved on. He's kind of, his more recent works have been in the Aberrat world, which is kind of for young adults, kind of like a darker, a kind of darker Harry Potter land, really, almost to an extent, and they're brilliant. He's already done three of them. It's supposed to be a five series thing, but he does all the illustrations in them, so we could be waiting quite a while before we see them, if you know what I mean. And he obviously put in The Scarlet Gospels, which was his last novel, which kind of continued on, or as he said, finished Pinhead's story arc as a character. It was cool seeing Harry Damore in that as well. He brought that character back from Lord of Illusion. So yeah, I think Clive Barker is one that I always like to talk about, but I never talk about. I think he's a great novelist. He's had a couple of less than great novels in there as well, but as an actual artist and someone who somehow has like a direct link to unnerve me, Barker stuff has always been up there. We obviously know that I dig a bit of the Stephen King. I did a whole series on him last year for Podcasts Under the Stairs. And there are other great novelists out there as well. I tend to find that I find out mostly about horror novels from you guys. Like, the listeners will forever tell me what they're reading, what they're checking out. And if I get the chance to, these days with the amount of podcasts I've got, a full-time job, training for a marathon and a family, I really do audiobooks more than actual books, which is a shame because I do enjoy reading, but sometimes it's pretty cool to do the audiobook experience. And some of the more recent ones, like David Wong, his two, John Dies at the End and This Book is Full of Spiders, are brilliant. I love both of them. I even enjoyed the movie adaptation as well. I know a lot of people like it. It's not as crazy as the book, but it was Don Coscarelli that was doing it, and there wasn't a lot of money. So, you know, what are you going to do? I thought he did really well with it anyway. So, yeah, there we go. Clive Barker talking about that shit right at the end. Right. I'm going to take my final break of the show. When I come back, I'm closing it out right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to this bonus episode of the podcast Under the Stairs, where we looked at your listener questions and discussion points. Thank you very much to everyone that submitted a question. I would love to do one of these again in a couple of months' time. We'll see where the lay of the land is for the horror gossip news on the movie front. maybe talk about horror books a bit more. I'd quite like to do that. I never really get a chance. One of my podcasting compadres out there has been toying with the idea of bringing a podcast forward that covers one such thing. Hopefully he will eventually do that. He's a bit of a lazy bastard though. So yeah, that was a ton of fun. Like I say, we should do this. We should do this again, guys. Can we do this again? We should do this again. No, I'll call you. Yeah, I'll call you. You know, don't call me. So anyway, yeah, I will be returning, ladies and gents, on Monday, just a couple of days away. I'll be joined by a guest who's making his podcast Under the Stairs debut. It's a rather fantastic Lee Russell. Oh, I can't wait to talk to this guy. We've been conversing for a while now. I've been wanting to get him on the show forever. Like, literally forever, been trying to get this guy on the show. And the stars have aligned. And he will be making his appearance, and we're going to be talking about two movies that I think are pretty fucking amazing, and I'm not giving them away. Right, I'll tell you one of them. One of them's The Prowler. Oh my god, did he just say The Prowler? Another one came about a year after and also features beasting effects by Tom Savini. It's very underappreciated and underlooked at. Let's see who can guess out there what it is. So yeah, a double bill of Tom Savini special effects madness from early 80s slashers. It's going to be a whole hell of a lot of fun. I never get to chat about 80, early 80s slashers on this show, but I'm doing it this time. I've also got the next couple of shows lined out for what I want to do, and I'm going to be booking guests real soon for them, getting them out on the show. I am supposed to be attending a screener for a new psychological film at the Glasgow Film Festival this weekend. If that does happen, there will be a review of that coming probably about this time next week, and hopefully an interview with the director as well. I'm still trying to lock that in. The movie is called The Chamber. We'll see if it's very good or not. So yeah, that's also happening, and I'm still desperately trying to get Ewan Kant back on from Arrow. That might happen in the next week or so. Arrow are officially releasing new titles today. If you're in the UK, this Friday, the 17th of February, new titles getting announced today. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Can't wait. All we know is it's something to do with a brain. One of them something to do with a brain. I know Phenomena is one of the titles because they spilled that. Phenomena 4K is definitely coming out. But what are the other titles? What are the other titles? Could it be Brain Dead? Maybe, who knows. Yeah, so there is a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. If you are checking us out on iTunes and you're not subscribed to that feed, please do it. That way you never miss an episode. You get them as soon as they drop and you get entire access to our back catalogue. Why would you not want the entirety of our back catalogue at the touch of a button? You can do that, listeners, by subscribing. And if you subscribe to us over there, please, please, please leave us some feedback. If it was 5 stars, for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes charts will push for more listeners to come across and check out the show. We're also on SoundCloud and Stitcher Smart Radio. You can check us out at our website, tputscast.com. You can visit our Facebook group page, which is Bahitchin. It's facebook.com/groups/tputscast. The Baz is our admin of our Twitter and Instagram. Both of them can be followed at tputscast. You definitely want to follow that Instagram if you want to take part in our competition. If you purchased a Baz v Horror Podcast Under the Stairs t-shirt or baseball top, if you can find the most insane place to have your photograph taken wearing said top and tag us in the Instagram to at tputscast, in a couple of weeks time we'll pick our favourite and that person will win a prize. I will not tell you what it is, all I'm going to say is it's going to be bitching. So there you go, make sure you do that, make sure you do it. Whew. Okay, I think this is time for me to leave you, ladies and gents. Thank you very much for checking out the show. Thank you once again for picking up the slack and making this week an entertaining, fun one with your ideas and suggestions. But wherever you are right now, whatever part of the world it is, whatever time zone it is, and whatever you're up to, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs, and I'm signing off. Yeah!